So it's 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 to 16. Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents, for this is pleasing to God. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and to ask God for help. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. Give the people these instructions so that no one may be open to blame. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. No widow may be put on the list of widows until she is over 60, has been faithful to her husband, and is known well for her good deeds, such as bringing up children, showing hospitality, washing the feet of the Lord's people, helping those in trouble, and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. As for younger widows, do not put them on such a list, for when their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ, they want to marry. Thus they bring judgment on themselves, because they have broken their first pledge. Besides, they get into bad habits of being idle and going about from house to house. And not only do they become idlers, but also busybodies who talk nonsense, saying things they ought not to. So I counsel young widows to marry, to have children, to manage their homes, and to give the enemy no opportunity for slander. Such have in fact already turned to follow Satan. If any woman who is a believer has widows in her care, she should continue to help them and not let the church be burdened with them, so that the church can help those widows who are really in need.
The message in the New Testament and that flows throughout the teachings are that the church must be distinctive. The way it was run, the way its members lived, the way they loved must be different. It must be counter-cultural. And the reason for that is because its head, Jesus Christ, his message was immensely countercultural. He said, I have come not to be served, but to serve. And 2 Timothy 5, the chapter we're looking at this morning, gives exactly the same message in a very practical way. It says, be countercultural. In a society where individualism is king, where what I want to do, I do, it says treat each other as family. Care for the vulnerable, care for the needy, and care without expecting anything in return. And to understand just how countercultural Paul's command to care, in this case for the widows, is, we need to understand a little bit of the culture that this letter was written into, the context in which it was written. We're probably more used to seeing powerful, aristocratic Roman women. That's the picture the films give. Well, that wasn't the norm. A female life hung in the balance from the very moment of birth. If a father didn't want any more girls, a newborn baby would be abandoned and left to die. Archaeologists have found an inscription in the town of Delphi. And in there it showed that of 600 families, only two had raised more than two daughters. And that's in a society where the number of children would be a lot more than our society is today. And if they survived this early danger, if they were kept, life didn't actually improve that much. 20% of girls would be married before they were 13. The most common death, most common cause of death amongst young girls at that time was failed abortions. Rape, abuse, and violence were not crimes if they were committed by a husband. Divorce was easy, and a woman could be thrown out with a simple letter of divorce as soon as a new woman came on the scene. And with life expectancy not particularly great at that time, a woman would often find herself widowed at a very young age. There'd be no welfare state, no life insurance policies. And so without help from others, she and her children could literally starve to death. And that wouldn't be in a local hospital or in a clinic, but in the alleyways of the town, Dead bodies in the streets would not be a scandal. Simply the responsibility of the road sweepers to remove and dump. And it's in this context the church was called to be different. A place where women were held in high esteem as equals of men, created in God's image and equally valuable. And the teachings and the facts show that out. Half of the women in the church were actually married after the age of 18. Men were called to love their wives as much as they loved themselves. Adultery was forbidden for men and for women. Divorce wasn't permitted. And women played a prominent role in the church. At the end of Romans, Paul greets the leaders and the prominent people in the church. He greets 18 men and 15 women. And then Christianity, from its earliest of days, cared for the most vulnerable in society. And these would often be women. And 1 Timothy chapter 5 gets seriously practical about this. The instructions are full of principles that we too, as a modern day church, must listen to. We too must still be distinctive. And as our former pastor, Andy Patterson, often put it, we must be deliciously different. Because we still serve the same Jesus who said, I have come not to be served, but to serve. So grab your Bibles if you haven't already done so. Turn to page 1193 and let's see what Paul has to say in this passage. So the first thing we see here is that Christ, church is family. Church is family. Paul says to Timothy, treat everyone as family. So if you go back into the previous chapter, verse 12, you'll remember Paul's instructions to Timothy as a church leader. He said to them, don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. Timothy was encouraged not to allow people to diminish his authority as a church leader on the grounds that he was relatively young. You have the authority, he said, to teach and to rebuke. But at the beginning of this chapter, Paul qualifies that. He says, but remember that all of these people are also your family. Don't take advantage of your position of authority. Don't abuse your power. Verse 1, do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. The older men, even if what you have to say to them is hard and a justifiable rebuke, should be spoken to with the same respect that you would speak to your own father. Don't look down on the younger guys just because you're in charge. Treat them as brothers, as equals, encouraging them to press on in their faith. Older women are to be treated with the respect and love that you would show your own mother. And younger women should be considered as sisters. And that word purity there in verse 2 could be translated as chastity. Paul is warning Timothy against sexual impurity with these younger women. They're to be looked on as sisters, cared for as sisters. Protect them. Don't take advantage of them. What Paul is saying here is to Timothy, the church is your family. Treat them that way first and foremost. And then what Paul does, he moves on to a family matter within the church. We don't know why he particularly highlights this, but what he does, he next instructs Timothy how to care for the widows in the church. Now the Bible has an awful lot to say about widows. In Middle Eastern society, a woman's identity was very much tied up with that of her husband. So on his death, she didn't just lose her husband, but also her social significance as well. But the Bible values widows for who they are. Justice and love are demanded for them. God is described as the defender of the widows. And it says that he defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow. And his people are to be the same. Do not take advantage of a widow or an orphan. If you do and they cry out to me, I will certainly hear their cry and my anger will be aroused. So the magistrates in Israel who withheld justice for the widow would be judged. Farmers were instructed to set aside food for the widows. Jesus himself had compassion on widows and he warned his disciples against those leaders who devoured the widows whilst being outwardly religious. And Paul now affirms that teaching, that God's people are to care for the widows. Look at verse 3. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. Now the word recognition, you'll see there, has an implication of providing for them rather than just think highly of them. And the context that we come onto certainly confirms that. What it's saying here is the church is responsible for the material well-being as well as the spiritual well-being of the widow. But before he goes into the specific instructions of how the church should do this, Paul first talks to the biological families within the church. And he says, be a real Christian, care for your own family. Be a real Christian, care for your own family. He's saying the first responsibility in caring for these widows falls completely on her own biological family. Look at verse 4. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own and so repaying their parents and grandparents. For this is pleasing to God. And then again, verse 16. If any woman who is a believer had widows in her care, she should continue to help them and not let the church be burdened with them, so that the church can help those widows who are really in need. Now, these verses give three reasons why the widow should first be cared for by her own family. You'll see those there. Firstly, is it repays their parents and grandparents for the care that they showed them. Most of us here have children. We know how hard parenting is. Those of you who have young kids probably have a new appreciation of what your parents have done for you. Paul is saying, Paul is saying here, to leave the care of your mother or widow to someone else is wrong. In thankfulness for what they've done for you, care for them. Secondly, it allows the church's resources to care for those who have no family. Do you see that in verse 16 there? Failure to care for the widows in your family increases the burden on the church's limited resources. If there's a widow in your household, you should provide for them, he says. This frees up the church to care for those who are really in need. And thirdly, and most importantly, it's pleasing to God. To care for a widow in your family is not just an act of thankfulness for what they've done for you, but an act of worship to God. It's pleasing to him. God loves to see his church live like he does, with a heart for the needy and the vulnerable, to love others. To love others, particularly the most needy, is pleasing to God. And Paul isn't messing about here. He is really serious about this. There are two phrases in these verses here that should really jump out and make us listen. Look at verse 4. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn, first of all, to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family. And verse 8. Anyone who does not but provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's strong language, isn't it, from Paul there? Paul's saying, if you call yourself a Christian, this must be what you do. To fail to care for the widows and your families is tantamount to denying the faith. If you want to practice what you claim to believe, then this is one way of doing it. Be a real Christian. Care for the needy in your family. And Paul then jumps back to his original message, having given that brief caveat there. He says, care for the needy. Again, verse 3 said, give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. Now, even there, do you see there's a caveat in that command? The church is not responsible for all widows, only those who are really in need. So how should Timothy decide who fits the bill here? Well, verses 5 and 6 lay out some general instructions, and then verses 8 to 14 give some more specific instructions on the practicalities of this mercy ministry. So, okay, we look at verses 5 and 6 there with me. The widow who is really in need and left alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and to ask God for help. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. What Paul is saying here is the widow from the church who really is in need will not be seen living it up and seeking pleasure in the world. A spiritual woman in need will be found in one place, that's on her knees before her God. And you see here, there's a hint that there's actually a dual requirement to qualify for this care. Not just that they're really in need physically, but also that they are godly women. And we see that spelt out in the next verses as Paul goes into some real detail on how these widows are to be cared for. We've got verses 8 to 10. So 9 to 10. No widow may be put on the list of widows unless she is over 60, has been faithful to her husband, and is well known for her good deeds, such as bringing up children, showing hospitality, washing the feet of the Lord's people, helping those in trouble, and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. So to qualify, a widow must be over 60 and living a good Christian life. A woman faithful to her late husband, and a woman who's known for her good deeds. Now, this sort of may seem that it's a little bit discriminatory, maybe a little bit harsh, a little bit ageist, maybe even, in an opposite way to the way we normally see ageism. But there are two things here to think about, two things that we should think through as we consider those questions. Firstly, the widow's register, this idea of caring for the widows in this very formal way, would not have been the only ministry that cared for the needy in the church. It's not that everyone else had to fend for themselves. If you don't fit this small category, tough. That wouldn't be the case. Paul is specifically instructing Timothy here over the care or how to care for these widows. We don't know why he particularly picked this ministry to give instructions on it in the passage, but it's clear the instructions to the church to care for the needy, care for each other, to care for others, and the practical examples that we see in Acts that we'll come on to in a minute say that this wouldn't be the only way that people were cared for. And secondly, these were tough times. These were times, as we've already heard, to be a widow was a struggle. And once word got out that the Church of Jesus Christ was looking after widows, it may be that they became inundated with widows trying to join the church in order to safeguard care. Yes, we must care for anyone in need. Of course we must. But the church's resources were not endless. These were not rich people. Discernment is required. Some of those joining the church may have been doing so just to gain a hot meal. And whilst we would love to give hot meals to all those who need it, of course, as I say, resources were not endless. So this was a matter of discernment. Timothy was called to be discerning and to put systems in place. These rules were actually a safety net for the widow's ministry. So he's saying, so first on the list must be those who are over 60, therefore unlikely to remarry, and who have a proven track record of living godly lives. And it would appear from some of the stuff we'll be coming on to in a moment as well, that being part of this list would also require an element of service in the church, which would also be a reason why the requirement to live godly lives was there. But why would these be the priority rather than non-believers? Would it not be the case that we should love unbelievers first so they can come to know Jesus? Well, Galatians 6 says, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people. There's the general rule, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. We are to care first for Christians. The destitute in our church are our priority. And this itself may raise a question in your mind. Surely we should care for those outside the kingdom so we can have opportunities to share the gospel. Of course we should. Of course we should. And as a church, we do. The Wild Goose Cafe is a great example of that, where we give hot food to homeless people every Sunday evening. But the Bible makes it clear that the priority must be fellow believers. And listen to Acts 2 and the effect that such care can have for the gospel's sake. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who has need. Do you see that? They were caring for each other. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And what happened when a church lived like this And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. The distinctive living of the church was so attractive, that caring for one another was so deliciously different, that people were brought to faith in Christ. Living as family is evangelism in and of itself. And then Paul then goes specifically on to explain the decision to only provide for the older widows and to exclude the younger women, which again may seem a little harsh. As for younger widows, do not put them on such a list, for when their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ, they want to marry. Thus they bring judgment on themselves because they have broken their first pledge. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house. Not only do they become idlers, but also busybodies who talk nonsense, saying things they ought not to. So I counsel younger widows to marry, to have children, to manage their homes, and to give the enemy no opportunity for slander. So Paul's saying here there are two reasons why the younger women should not be enrolled onto this list where care is provided. Firstly, the enrollment on the list, as I've already mentioned, appears to be accompanied by some sort of pledge. Maybe a pledge to serve in the church in some capacity. Now, a younger widow, and as I've already said, there may have been a number of these in the church because of the life expectancy and the way and women would often be widowed young. They may, once they have got over the loss of their husband, have desires to remarry, which would no longer enable them to fulfill the pledge which they may have made had they been enrolled. So Paul is saying, don't put them in a position where they make a pledge to serve the church, only then to break it later on. And the second reason is that providing financially for a younger widow may not be such a good idea because of how they may then choose to spend their time. Now, 2 weeks ago, we read a list of qualifications of an elder in Timothy. And Paul very deliberately there included things which guys may be more prone towards, sins that are maybe guy sins, not given to drunkenness, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome and not a lover of money. These are the sins of aggression, of violence and of power. And speaking generally, I will say that again, I am speaking generally, these are sins which men are prone to. And in this passage today, Paul is looking at these young women and sees a tendency towards what are, generally speaking, I'll say that again, generally speaking, sins that women are more prone to fall into. These women would go from house to house, appears to be on some sort of coffee morning rota, talking rubbish, poking their nose into everyone else's business, and gossiping. I knew I could get into trouble with this message. Paul would rather that these young women remarry, have children, and manage their home. He's saying, use your hands for good and your tongues for the gospel. Now, gossiping, busybodying, idleness, these may seem minor sins to us, but Paul takes them very seriously. He says in verse 15, some have in fact already turned away to follow Satan. This is not a trifling matter. This lifestyle choice has caused some to drift away from the faith and to go the world's way. So not putting the women on the list is not an act of cruelty. It's done for their good, to encourage them in their godliness and to protect them from sin. So, 1 Timothy 5 appears to be a very specific passage with a very narrow application. Is the message of this passage simply that we should care for the widows? If so, then there's not much more for me to say, because as a church we have the widows at Kensington Group, we have the day centre, we have the pastoral care fund for those with material need. So can we all pack up and go home satisfied that we're doing as we should? The answer won't surprise me. No, I don't think we can. Because I think there are much wider applications as well as these specific ones. So let me quickly just run through five applications that I'd like to bring out of this passage. Number one, the church is family. The church is family. Brothers and sisters, look around you? Can I introduce you to your family? 4 miles south of here, there are 200 to 300 or so brothers, sisters, fathers, mothers, children of yours and of mine meeting in our Eastern congregation. They are family. And then another mile south of there are 70 or so family members meeting in our BC3 congregation. Each one is to be treated with respect, love, with care, and with action because they are family. And can I just flag up here one thing? You may be aware or may not that BC3 is in desperate need of a new building. They probably will be needing somewhere at the end of March. Today they are having a time of prayer and fasting. We are their family. We should be standing alongside them in that. So can I maybe just suggest, when you go home, before lunch, maybe as a family in your home, you just spend 5-10 minutes praying for BC3 and the time they'll be having and for God's provision of a new building. And this idea of a family is not an abstract concept. It must make a difference to our choices. Think about how you treat your biological family. If you treat church family any different, there's something wrong. Do not allow your biological family and the time, your family time together, to become an idol, something that cannot be touched. Use it to model to your children hospitality, to care and to love. I can assure you that will be of much greater benefit to your little people than it would to have these close times where nothing else can touch them. Don't make your kids the center of everything you do. Use your time with them to teach, to model to them, to look outside of themselves and to serve others. I am so grateful to God for parents whose home was always open. Sunday lunch, Sunday tea time, Christmas Day would always have visitors who were otherwise would be alone. I am so grateful that was modeled to me. And think of your little ones and how you can model that to them. Now, maybe this whole idea of family sounds a bit odd to you. Maybe you're here just because it's what you do or it's what you think you should do. So let's think about that. What is it that makes members of the church family? Well, just like a physical family, it's a common father. The Bible talks about Christians being adopted into the family of God. We were once not in this family, but God, through his love for us, sent his son, Jesus Christ, to take the punishment of our rebellious lives and has adopted us into his family. He's adopted us. We belong to God and we belong to his family. And you too can belong. We love the fact that you're here. But you can be in the family of God. All you need to do is to seek him, to acknowledge that your life hasn't put him first, and to seek his forgiveness in that. God the Father longs to bring you into his family. Okay, second application. Care for widows and the elderly in the family. Care for the widows and the elderly in your family. The responsibility for caring for elderly parents in your family, first and foremost, is yours and is mine. And I know this is something that some of you are going through right now. And we're praying for you in that. And we acknowledge the struggles and the difficulties and the sadness that this can create. And what does this passage say? Care for them. Love them. Now, this may mean ensuring that safe and appropriate residential or nursing care is being provided. This passage does not say that that is wrong. That is often a good thing to do. But it does place the responsibility for that care on us. And that responsibility remains with us for as long as they live. Thirdly, the responsibility for our biological family is primarily ours, not the church's. And I think what I'm trying to say here, this principle doesn't just apply to elderly parents or to widows. It applies to wider family too. And as we've already seen, it applies to spiritual care and material care. Parents, you wouldn't let your children go without food. But the primary responsibility for their spiritual care is also yours. Fathers, particularly, you are responsible for your kids' hearts. We are blessed with the kids' work here. We are so thankful for all the work that's put into them. But it's here to support the work that should be done at home, not to replace it. Fourth, the church must care for the widows and the needy. This is very obvious from this passage. Let's just think that through for a moment. Because being widowed these days rarely means being destitute. But it can mean being lonely. And the care of widows is not just the responsibility of formal church ministry, but each of us individually. There are widows in our church, both here at Village and at Eastern Congregation, who would love just to see someone during the week. This is our responsibility. We're to care for them. A widow member of Kensington Baptist Church receiving no visitors in a week brings shame on us. It should not happen. It's our responsibility. But equally, the destitute do exist in our church, and they equally are responsibility. In this passage, there are apparent obstacles to the widows getting help from them, and these are because of lack of resource, I've already said. With bottomless pockets, everyone could have been cared for. And if Kensington Baptist Church is to fulfil its obligation to care for the needy, we need the resources to do so. And sitting here in Emerson's Green, we may be tempted to think that financially needy don't really exist in our church. The welfare state, saving plans, life insurance, etc. All these have meant that this no longer is a problem. It is. It's a problem. The Iranian Fellowship, which meets on Thursdays, currently have at least half a dozen guys going through the asylum process. They receive no benefits, and many of them literally have nothing. Our resources are limited. We'd love to do more to help. We have a pastoral care fund, which does provide for some of these guys, provides food for them, contributes towards rent, and it does some great work. But there's so much more we could do. Please prayerfully consider giving to that pastoral care fund, whether as a one-off or on a regular basis. If you'd like to find out more, please come and speak to me or Johnny afterwards. It's a great way to be deliciously different. And finally, and fifthly, use your time for good and your tongue for the gospel. Use your time for good and your tongue for the gospel. The young widows of the church there with Timothy weren't doing that. They were gossiping busybodies. Their time was wasted and they talked rubbish. And this wasn't just a first century problem, was it? And social media has actually meant we no longer need to go from house to house to do this. We can do it sat on our own sofa. And Paul is recognizing this is a sin women are more prone to. So can I address you women here with danger of getting into big trouble? At the Village, we are hugely blessed to have so many young mums engaged in the most noble task of bringing up young children. Your job is the most important job there is. But, as we see from Paul's suggestions here, being in that sort of context can create temptation to fall into the same sins as the young widows here. Getting together for a coffee is fantastic. Going to toddler groups is great. But how you spend that time and how you use your tongue is important. Too easily, and men must listen to this because we can do this just as well. Too easily, conversation can move towards gossip and busybodying. Your speech is to be pure and gospel-driven. Ask yourself this in any situation. Would you say the thing you're about to say if Jesus was sitting next to you? And the great thing here is you can kill two birds with one stone here. If you want some time when you want to get out from the house with your little one, why not visit one of our widows? The joy that an older lady will experience having a little person in their living room cannot be measured. Spend time learning from these dear old saints. They have a lot to teach us. Why don't you vow to visit a widow once or twice a month? Jill might be inundated if we all do it within village here. So why not seek out Rob Parker? He would love to speak to you, to tell you about widows who maybe could just love to have someone knock on their door and say, I'll come and have a coffee with you. Maybe you work and you think this isn't for you. Maybe you say, I just haven't got time for that. Can I just ask you to examine your diary and to think through how much of your time is put aside for your pleasure compared to caring for others? And I'm not talking about how many church meetings we have here. I'm talking about a deliberate effort to use time for the care of the needy. Do you use your time for good? Guys, don't switch off here. We too must examine our diaries and examine our hearts to see if caring for others is a priority. We will often use busyness as an excuse, but we will have no problem finding time when we have an opportunity to be entertained. We could provide practical help in many ways for widows, for single mums, for elderly couples. Family. My family, here this morning. Paul takes the care of our own very seriously. To fail to do so is to be worse than unbelievers. To do so pleases God. We are to live lives that are distinctive in how we spend our money, how we use our time, and how we use our tongues. We are to be deliciously different. Let me pray. Lord God, we do thank you that you are a God who cares for the needy. We thank you that you cared for us in our most desperate state when we were lost and dead, and yet you sent Jesus so that we may know life. So Lord, may we live that life in the lives of others by showing care and blessing them, giving them love and, Lord, being godly. May our tongues speak good for your gospel. May our time be used wisely. And may we love each other as family and build one another up. For we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.